Audio Berkman, and this is Amanda Mickle, who's interviewing Nolan Bowie, one of Berkman's fellows. Nolan, you brought up a comment during the last presentation about internet use worldwide.
Yes, it was in response to the suggestion that the internet was the new public. When I think of the public, I think of the core of the word democracy, the Greek origin, which is the demos, which means the people, but it means all of the people, and that is the public. When we talk about the internet, as was pointed out by one of the members of the audience, that is primarily used worldwide by elites. More people use it in the United States, but when we assume that they have access, we don't go the next step to say how they use it. They may not be reading text, they may be playing games, they may be downloading pornography,
they may be
wasting their time. One of the panelists suggested to my question that that was not an internet issue, but rather an issue of some other kinds of public policy. They're all interrelated, because what was also pointed out by both panelists is that the changes taking place are extremely fast. We're living in an era of punctuated change, of paradigm shift, where we have to begin to question all of our assumptions about the way the world is and the way it ought to be, because the long term is even shorter and shorter, and the shelf space of everything is shorter and shorter. We are living in an age, which is really pointed out by some of the members of the panel, there are really no experts anymore. So the ultimate question is a philosophical question, not necessarily a technology question, which is, what kind of society do we want? Do we want one that is inclusive or one that is exclusive? One that is open or one that is authoritarian? Now, if one of the core values that we want to promote into the future is democracy, we ought to be able to have, we ought to decide that through democratic processes, which means the public ought to be involved. Conversations, education, explanations, transparency, and all those things. This is an example of what ought to be happening with all of the people. But as was pointed out, when you look around, you see mainly white faces. Now, you asked me about literacy. I can talk about literacy. I'm on the board of the National Center for Adult Literacy, and that's the reason I know the statistics. The first national report on adult literacy in the United States was 1992. 47% of the adults are barely reading, levels 1 and 2. They updated that last year. No progress. As a matter of fact, what they did find was some people with college educations are not retaining the knowledge, so maybe they're not gaining the knowledge about them. Among black fourth graders, they do national surveys of reading proficiency. Something like 64% of black kids are not reading at proficiency.
So when you come back to this question then of what is public media, is the internet in some ways its savior or its grace?
Well,
what do you think? Do we have then, is public media a cobbled set of solutions, one of which may be internet, one may be the local networks as we have them, one may be people themselves?
Well, all of those things are part of the media networks. Habermas talked about having the public sphere, which is a sort of an environment rather than an all-encompassing environment rather than a particular place or thing. It's where conversations are not mediated either by the media or by government. We need more of that to take place. The internet is a good example of where that does take place through people with IMing and text messages and browsing and blogging.
One of the things that you said that struck me was that, you know, there is more of an obligation that we have toward the creation of our media in a sense, that we have to take responsibility for the conditions in which we live. And so I'm wondering when Phil at Minnesota Public Radio showed some of the tools that they use. For example, people could use a tool to calculate what they were giving in taxes. Mm-hmm. Do you look at a tool like that and think that's in the right direction, that's taking us closer, or is it something gratuitous? Is it outside of public media?
Well, it's gratuitous because they don't have to do it. I think everyone ought to do it. Broadcasters at one period in history, had, it ended in 1981 1987, the FCC got rid of the Fairness Doctrine, which provided issue access. Part of that time, all broadcasters had an affirmative obligation throughout the broadcast day to air controversial issues of public importance and then provide contrasting viewpoints. that was a means to involve the public. What they're doing at the Minnesota Public Radio Station, I think, is great, and I think all public and commercial radio, television, newspapers ought to be doing something similar to it. However, the reality of the market is that they're losing resources, they're losing staff, they are doing less and less hard kind of reporting, particularly investigative reporting. I think that there may be the exception, but I think there are positive exceptions that other media ought to follow. I spoke a couple of weeks ago at the National Federation of Community Broadcasters and told them that in order for them to be relevant and to have a positive future, they're going to have to become even more involved with their communities. They're going to have to be, the community is going to have to be part of the broadcast milieu. They're going to have to be part of an interactive, ongoing conversation. I think all media are similarly situated.
So one of the questions that was also asked was, I hear that you're spending a lot of time investing into this database, but what are you doing to profile people who are doing things on their own? So instead of going and asking them a question, just looking out to see what people are writing on their own blogs and putting up on websites and are doing in meetings, do you think, in line with what you just said, that that's...
Well, a lot of university research is now sort of surveying the internet and seeing who's going to go and where. Newspapers are also doing it because they know that they're losing market share and they're losing readers to people who consume their information, their news, the weather, classified ads through Craigslist, and shopping through...
I guess what I'm saying is, you know, one of the things that they pointed out is that the role of the analyst, mm-hmm. the person who's sitting there, who's managing the database, who's crunching the numbers or looking at the stories, is a very important one, and in many cases they mediate the relationship between the community and the reporter.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what the person was asking is that really enough that you just sit at the other end of the line, send out an email, and just take back what comes in instead of perhaps opening the window?
No, that's never
and
enough.
Looking at
that's not a conversation.
Right.
Again, what democracy demands is interactivity between the people among themselves and the government. The media traditionally played a role to mediate that, or to explain and translate, but it's always had a bias. Opportunities are now to eliminate the bias and go directly to the people and have them talk to themselves and have them talk to the media. The media still has a very strong role to explain and translate and to put in the context, which many members of the public don't have the resources to do. They don't have the history. You know, we have a bias against history in this country. We don't know our own history. We are more likely, or just as likely, to rely on mythology than we are in terms of our true history or facts.
Thanks. Well, thank you very much, Nolan.
Oh, you're welcome very much.
And enjoy the rest of the conference.